Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Provincial State of Mind with myself, Owen Harrison, Jeff Neville and Tom Savage. This is a podcast focused on all four Irish provincial sides in both the URC and European competitions. We discuss what happened the previous weekend, what we can expect from each province in their upcoming games, as well as any major off-field news. Just myself and Jeff starting off tonight anyway. So Tom is deserting us this week. So what have you been up to this week, Jeff?
Not a whole heap, no, if I'm honest with you. A lot of nappies and that, but I had a very strange experience today in at Dunn's of all places.
We're stepping out from our normal sort of
going up in the world. But I was, you know, I was at the self checkouts, whatever it was, like, and scanning away, whatever, and it's fine. And suddenly it was an unknown item in baggage
in
area,
area,
whatever they call it anyway. Like, but like I was only getting like three things. So I was a bit like, oh, that's strange. And I looked down and there was a tin of cat food. And I definitely didn't get cat food. I don't have a cat. Like, so a tin of cat food there. Like, so I kind of picked it up and I looked around me, like, and there was a woman on the till beside me. And I kind of went, sorry, is that yours? And she just went, well, yeah, it was, but I don't want it. And I was like, so I guess I was like, but like, what'll I do with it? And she was like, oh, I don't know, you can just put it somewhere. Like, I <don't... laughs> so I just kind of looked around. I didn't know where to put it. Like, so I just kind of put it back on her thing, like, because there was no tables or anything. Like, the next best thing I could do was, I don't know, put it on the ground. Like, so I just kind of put it back on hers. But she was like, no, I told you I don't want it. Just put it back somewhere. And she just kind of like turned her back to me. So I had to just kind of stand there for ages. And you know, like when eventually they kind of copy and they come over and they're like, are you okay there? Or do you need something? Do you know, sometimes like if it's, you might need clearance or something. Do you know that kind of, yeah. I don't know what it is. But like, I just kind of had to stand there like a tool. And a lady came over to me and she was like, is everything okay? And I was like, I don't want this. She was like, oh, I'll take it off you. And I was like, it's actually not mine. And she was like, what do you mean it's not yours? And I was like, I don't know why I didn't just say that lady didn't want it, but I was just like, oh, it was just here. It just showed up halfway through my shop, but I don't want it. And your mom was like, okay, yeah, I'll take that off you. I was like, thanks very much. But like, who does that? Like, who just, imagine, like, do you know, if it was a normal till, imagine I like looked at an item I didn't want and I just put it in your shopping and I was like, no,
put it
no,
over
fine.
The divider, yeah, yeah. To the next person.
No, I don't want it, it's fine, you take that there. And you're like, I don't want it either. And you're like, yeah, well, you deal with it now, I'm not dealing with it. I don't know, maybe she was having a bad day, but geez, it was so strange. Especially then,
why do
just,
you always have these strange interactions when you go shopping?
I was standing there and I was like, why is it always me? Like, why can it not happen to someone and I can watch it and enjoy the show rather than being in it? But it doesn't actually happen all that often, to be honest with you. It's just now and again, I suppose. But I'm trying to think, did I have any other? I had a really awkward moment as well on social media, on Instagram. I thought I was replying to my wife on like a story or something like that, but I wasn't. I was replying to the person who put up the story, and it was some like food page. And I like it was completely innocent. I just replied like, oh, I bought sausages earlier. But I was like, oh, I haven't heard back yet. Like, and then next thing I got a message back from that food page and it was like, oh, we love sausages. You know, I don't know, I suppose to make it less weird than sent them a message saying I bought sausages. So they just replied and they were like, yeah, we got sausages, we love sausages or something. And I was like, yeah, cool, me too. Unfollow. Block. Yeah,
unfollow, you're not my wife.
Yeah, no, that was about the highlight of my week so far, was a woman making me buy her cat food for her, I suppose. How was life with you?
Not too bad. It's finally got round to decent weather, so broke out the barbecue.
What you have?
Did the garden. Had all the in-laws up over the weekend. So did a bit of piri piri chicken, some nice bit of steak, a few burgers.
Like a smorgasbord on the barbecue.
Yeah, just a bit of everything.
You're not a one meat man.
Oh God, no! Have to have, Have to do load of it, and then that will then carry over for the next 2 to 3 days in the fridge.
The barbecue is nice, but there's nothing better than the next day when you open your fridge for lunch or something and you see that bit of piri piri chicken or the odd rib or something, and you're just like, oh, forgot about that.
And when you work from home as well, it's even better. Lunchtime, and it's already prepared for you.
That does sound delicious. I love
See?
That. Yeah, I love the leftovers. That's like the initial barbecue is lovely. Leftover. Same with Christmas dinner, isn't it? Like the next day.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, here we go. It's on.
Yeah, it's on.
Yeah.
And it, like Christmas, you make the proper sandwiches then, because you have all the goodies.
Yeah, and it'd be a shame if you didn't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And my secret to it is actually a salad. I do a carrot and cheese salad with an Italian dressing on it.
A carrot and cheese. What cheese?
Grated cheese. So grated cheese, grated
like
carrot.
Like a cheddar.
Yeah, like a cheddar or mozzarella mix.
A mozzarella. I was imagining a feta. But a cheddar.
Yeah.
Not too strong, not too heavy.
No. And then grate the carrot as well. About half and half, and then a bit of an Italian dressing over the top of it.
Any leaves, or is it just carrot and cheese?
Just carrot and cheese. You can have the leaves separate.
No way.
And that goes into a bowl, mix it all up. Where you go?
Carrot and cheese. Just carrot and cheese.
Just carrot and cheese with Italian dressing. I highly recommend the Paul Newman's dressing. It's the nicest Italian dressing out there to go with it.
I'm going to try that. Just carrot, just cheese. That's bold.
Yeah.
I can't I can't picture that in my head. I think you need a buffer. You need leaf of. Well, okay. We'll do it.
Try it out. You can come back to me on it. Yeah.
I'd nearly try it after this podcast because I'm starving and we've cheese downstairs and I know we've a carrot downstairs.
Do you have the Italian dressing?
I have no Italian dressing though.
Oh, the Italian dressing is the most. That's what gives it.
That's what
gives it. Because you have. Yeah, you have the sweet and sour, and then you have a little bit of sort of the vinaigrette sort of flavor coming from the Italian dressing.
Okay. I'll trust you.
Yeah.
I'll trust you. If Tom was here now, he'd talk about how he only eats white bread or dry toast or something like that. But he's not here, which is great. He won't be dragging down the food conversation. I'm still struggling to get my head around this carrot and cheese, but I trust you. I'm going to do it. I had a barbecue today, actually.
What did you? What did you have?
Oh, just burgers. Nothing. Just, you know, it's Tuesday. Just quick run of the mill, quick barbecue, but just burgers. But grilled pineapple.
Yes,
changes the game. Yeah, changes the game. Makes the burger unbelievable as well. Even if you dry out the burger a little bit by accident, pineapple will come to the rescue. Saves that lovely. So, yeah, can't go wrong. Can't go wrong. And then if you have a little bit of grilled pineapple left over, just a little bit of vanilla ice cream beside it. There you go.
That's it. I'd see that grilled pineapple as a dessert now rather than a...
Oh, yeah. That's fair. That is absolutely fair. But it goes well on a burger now. Worth the go. It is worth the go. But yeah, that's my life now. That is my life.
I suppose we better talk some rugby this week.
Let's.
Right, we'll start with first game from last weekend, Ulster against Benetton. Ulster eked out a 38-34 win against Benetton. Huge win in the scheme of things for Ulster. That sort of brought them back inside the top eight, just about. But it's a big 5-point win considering their next couple of matches. They have Scarlets away, Leinster at home, and then Munster away. So myself and Tom were saying this last week. This was one that they needed the points from. This was
100%.
To me, this was a big one.
100%. I think the 2 points that Benetton got are very big as well in the context of the running of the season, especially if you're a Connacht, or maybe an Edinburgh or something like that. But it's a massive, massive 2 points for them. You could look at the tries they got. Some of them would make your teeth itch, I suppose, if you were an Ulster fan. Like, you look at the one that was ripped over the try line. You look at Addison's pass that went to nobody. Even that last try where the ref had whistled to carry the player and Benetton went quick, but he allowed the try. Now, was it Marshall? I think he was yellow carding at the time. I probably would have given that as a penalty try anyway. on replay, but ultimately he had blown the whistle twice, so time is technically off. So that Benetton try shouldn't have counted when you think about it. Like, no, it did, and whatever, we move on. Ulster still won the game, but that is a big point to Benetton as a result of that decision. But Ulster, funny, like Ulster looked like they were enjoying their attack. It looked like they were enjoying playing running rugby and stuff like that, but they were quite porous in defence at times. And
yeah,
like, that's the issue. Like, it's I thought it would be one of the games of the weekend, if not the game of the weekend, maybe, just considering the context and considering the teams, etc. And, you know, Ulster on the bounce back under Murphy, Benetton playing lovely rugby. And in fairness, there was what, 74 odd points scored in the game? 72, 74 odd points. So, like, it didn't disappoint. But ultimately, Ulster have, they're in squeaky bum time. And like we saw there a couple of weeks ago, they dropped two places despite winning. So this is how tight the table is at the moment. So if your defence is going to be quite porous, obviously this is not in any way good rugby analysis. If your defence is poor, you're going to struggle to win games. But they're in such a squeaky bum time place that they can't afford to leak easy points. And let's be honest as well, given how they've played and stuff this season, they've not exactly been winning convincingly. They've not been putting games to bed, etc. At times, they can't afford to leak those tries. You know, it's not like they're well ahead and not making a contest out of it. So, yeah, it was a good win. They got the 5 points. And even you look at maybe the team they had out, missing McCluskey played.
Kitsoff, Henderson.
That's the one I was looking for. That Menoncello Kitsoff, or fuck's sake, sorry. That Menoncello McCluskey battle was fabulous throughout the game.
Brilliant.
And did you see, which try was it? Was it the last one, maybe, when they tapped and went and Menoncello just stood up the defender, ghosted and passed? Was it the last one? I can't remember, but no, I don't think it was, but it was filthy anyway for Menoncello. But it was a great game, but I think Ulster, they just need to sort that defence.
I think for Ulster, what they actually need is they need to focus on results rather than performance. It's just getting through to the end of the season now, because Richie Murphy has inherited this squad, this team. We know there's going to be changes at the end of the season, the likes of Kitsoff going. There's going to be big changes, I imagine, over the next season or two as they try to rebuild and deal with the financial realities of where they are. The biggest thing for Ulster is that they finish in the top eight and continue to get the Champions Cup games, which leads to the financial gains on the back of the big crowds coming in. And to get there, I don't think style matters. I don't think anything else matters. It's just get it to the end of the season, finish in the top eight, guarantee the Champions Cup. And then you're looking at putting in the sort of rebuilding the squad and the coaching structure. Because you've got to see that it may not be exactly the same. You're potentially getting either Richie Murphy or a new head coach coming in there and just totally starting afresh. And that'll be defensively and potentially even the attack. And while you pointed out there, the attack has, I think, stepped up a gear or two, but definitely the defence has sort of suffered on that. And that's strange, because normally the defence is one of the first things that you can fix and do something with. And it's even this, I imagine, this week off that they have coming up, that's something that they're going to be working on. That's going to be their top priority.
But like here's a fun fact for you. A third of Benetton's bonus points came in that game against Ulster. A third of their bonus points for the season came in that game against Ulster. So, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I thought it was an interesting tidbit. But like, Ulster seventh now at the moment. You mentioned the games that they have. Like, yes, they have Leinster at home, but that's now a game for Leinster. Like, if memory serves, Leinster's last game 2 years ago of the regular league was against Munster, and they sent out children in that game. Now, they still won it, don't get me wrong. But even if they didn't, they had top spot, like all signed, sealed, delivered. Now Leinster are going into these games. They've Ospreys first. I don't mean to go on to Leinster yet, sorry, but they've Ospreys first. Then they have Ulster, and then they have Connacht, I believe. That's top of my head now, but I think that is right. They definitely have Ulster and Connacht, because I know Munster have Ulster and Connacht as well. So it's just whether it's home or away, I can't remember. But they've Ospreys first.
Leinster have Ospreys at home, Ulster away, and then Connacht at home.
Not bad, Jeff. Not bad. But that Ulster away game now for Leinster is a big game, because they've relinquished top spot. There's only a point between them and Munster in third. There's only 3 points between them and Bulls. So, I mean, it now becomes a case of, okay, if we, let's say, come second, you're still looking at a home semi-final if you get there, and then going away to Glasgow. But suddenly, if you, let's say you drop below the Bulls, will you have to go to South Africa for one of those games then in the knockouts? Like, it becomes a horrible one for Leinster as well. So suddenly that game against Ulster, it's an awful lot. Like, usually in the business end of the URC, you're kind of thinking, like, Leinster focusing on Europe, which they still are now, but I think Leinster will have to focus on the URC that bit more this season, which makes that Ulster game that bit more painful, which means that Ulster game, from an Ulster perspective, is going to be a very difficult, maybe an even more difficult 4 points. So it's just such a good run into the end of the season that, like, literally every game counts. Every single game counts.
Yeah, and if you look at the for Leinster, and we'll get to it in a bit more detail, that Ulster game is the week before the Champions Cup final. So if they were to qualify, do they rest players? Do they send out? Do they do a mix and match? There's a lot to discuss there for that part of it. For Ulster, as you say, look, Scarlets up next. That's the one I think they've got to target, and then try and take something from the last two games to keep them in the hunt.
Scarlets has to be 4 points. They've only won 3 games this season. It has to be 4 points.
I think they have to be looking at 5.
Oh, I know. I mean, at least a win is non-negotiable.
Non-negotiable on that one. So that's Ulster. Moving on then to Munster, who had a very impressive tour of South Africa. They beat the Lions 33-13. A comprehensive win.
Is that the first 10 points tour to South Africa? Has any other team gone 10 points for 10 points? If they have, I don't remember it.
I don't think anyone has.
Listen, we'll say it's the first.
But we'll say it is the first, yeah.
How good, like?
I haven't seen a team tactically execute a game plan that well for a long, long time. It was an absolute tactical masterclass. Like, if you look at it early, like the Lions are a perfect counter-attacking team. So what you want to avoid doing is kicking long to them and giving them a chance to run it back at you and giving them space to do that. Munster, when they did kick, either kicked the ball out, made sure it got into the stands, or they kicked short and they made them contestables and they made it messy. Even if the Lions won it, it was something that Munster could get up and reset the defensive line and do it well. The other thing is, they actually, if you think about it logically, if a team is designed to counterattack against you, what's the one thing they don't want? Lots of possession, lots of ball.
If a team is designed to counterattack against you.
Yeah, if the team you're playing is designed to counterattack.
Just play keep ball.
Well, no, you actually give them the ball. You don't give them a chance to come at you. Like, from a counterattack, if they have possession, they have to generate something from it.
Oh, sorry, I'm with you. Yeah.
So if you don't kick them the ball, if they have the ball, but they have it in an area where you can set your defense, you're forcing them either to play ball or to kick it away to you. And I think that's, like, if you look at the stats, the Lions actually had a lot of possession. They had a lot of territory, but they didn't do anything with it because they're not set up to be that sort of on ball team and go through phase after phase after phase.
One statistic that jumped out on me, and I saw it during the game, and I'm actually just double checking now because I actually didn't think to double check this before the game or before this podcast began, but was the penalty count for Munster. Am I right in saying that even at one stage in the game, Munster, near enough the end of the game, Munster had like 15 penalties conceded or something? I'm just double
Yeah.
checking here now because if that is correct and that's what I saw, like that's
Munster 14
14.
was the end count, penalties
Okay.
conceded.
Well, like, I mean, yeah, 14 penalties against 8, but you wouldn't think the team that conceded 14 penalties scored 4 tries to 1. Like that's a big penalty count. But credit to them. That
Yeah.
try off a scrum, I think it was two phases off a scrum. Gavin Coombs gave the pass at the end.
Yeah, for
EK,
Nash in the corner was not Nash into the corner, yeah.
EK on Twitter did a fabulous little video on that, just off the scrum. It's the crash in the middle, but Coombs just baits out to the wing and he just takes possession second phase then, and he's up against the winger, just offload bang try. It's such a well worked try. So simple, but it just works so well. Overall, those 10 points in South Africa, I'm going to say it, they have me dreaming. Like, Leinster have a semi-final, potentially a final. Ospreys could see that as surprise attack time. Ospreys haven't been that bad this season, to be fair, under Booth. They have Ulster then and Connacht. There's only a point between Munster and Leinster. And then Glasgow have a trip to South Africa. So,
Well, the other thing is Ospreys are like you look at at Munster overall, they're now in a race for the top two,
yeah.
right? Which means they can get, that's a home. If they get into the top
A
two,
home
it's
semi, yeah.
home quarter and potentially a home semi if they get
Yeah.
there, which is massive. As you said, Glasgow play Zebre once, but they have a trip to South Africa, two
I
games
think the
there.
South Africa's first.
Yeah, and then
Yeah.
Zebre is the last game. So that's a big one there. I still think the Bulls are the ones to watch there, that coming up for the top two.
They're so
They,
sneaky.
yeah, they and they have a quality side there. And like I, the other one that you mentioned was the Ospreys. The Ospreys are in 10th. They're still fighting for top eight,
Oh, like even the Lions in 11th,
are in that,
they're
yeah.
fighting there. Like, just there's nothing between them. Like,
So it's so tight. I think Munster, as you said, they're suddenly back in it. They're starting to get a few players back. And I think the biggest thing that I took from that is Munster, even I think they switched things around initially for the Bulls game and they loaded the bench. And you look at that power that was able to come off the bench at 60 minutes, where you're bringing players like, Gavin Coombs off the bench. You're able to, like Ollie Yeager, these guys. If you're able, rather than them coming off the pitch at 60, 70 minutes, if you're only bringing them on at 50, sometime between 50 and 60 minutes, that's the end power that Munster had been missing
So
over the winter period.
it's almost like South Africa were onto something.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but it is like Munster got everybody back and this is what they're doing with it. Just the way you mentioned the Bulls there as well. Bulls are at home next two games, obviously. They've Glasgow, Benetton, and then they're away to the Sharks. So they're still in South Africa for the last three games, which is from a Munster perspective, probably a killer. But another killer is probably the fact that that second game against Benetton are still in the hunt for the challenge. So they're
Yeah.
playing this weekend against somebody. And again, if it's a case that they win that, do you bring your best squad to South Africa, given the fact that you would have a final after that South African tour? You're probably not. Let's be honest. So that's probably a kick in the balls for Munster as well. But
Well, no. What do you call it? Benetton go to. They start their South African tour, so they go to the Sharks
yeah, but
and the Bulls.
they have the Bulls second.
Yeah, and then they
But
play the Challenge Cup after that.
the Challenge Cup semi-final, is that not this weekend, is it?
Oh, sorry, it is, yes.
Yeah, which
So
means
then
if they win that, they'll be going to South Africa after getting into a final.
the final.
And let's be honest here, like if they're in a Challenge Cup final, they're 100% prioritizing that over trying to get a fucking win away in Loftus. Like, there's no way they're going to do that. Like,
Well,
so.
it's you see that could be the difference could be that they'll need something out of the South Africa one to qualify top eight
But
and
that's
get
enough.
into the Champions
But
Cup.
they get in Champions Cup, they win Challenge.
Yeah, but you'd still have to win it. If you
But
lose the if you lose the Challenge
I
Cup
think they'll still come
afterwards.
top eight, to be honest. Like,
They
it's
send a
such.
weakened team down to South Africa, you lose two games down
Yeah,
there.
no team has ever done that before. Dig, 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 dig.
It's tough going.
Like
To see how the
if you
team's
look at
challenged
Benetton
and
at the moment, like
prioritize.
they're in eighth at the moment, right? And then you look at, let's say, sorry, they're in eighth at the moment, and we look at their last three games. Yeah, they're away in South Africa. Their last game's at home to Edinburgh. I fancy them for that, but ultimately it's going to come down to if they win this weekend, who do they send to South Africa?
Yeah.
Like I don't know. Well, in fairness, as well, Benetton have a massive squad, so. There's that side of it, I suppose. What do they have? Like 50 odd on their books, 54, 53, 54, I think.
Yeah, they've a lot of good young players coming through.
So this, you know, they still probably will end up sending a decent squad down, but do you go full bore if you're into a Challenge Cup final? Benetton haven't won a final since the Rainbow Cup against the Bulls, funnily enough.
Enough, yeah.
Funnily enough. So yeah, oh, I don't know, it's a tight one. Sorry, we went down a Benetton Bulls rabbit hole there from Munster, but it all counts, doesn't it?
It does. And look, for getting back to Munster, I mean, like their remaining games are, they have a week to prepare for Connacht. It's for Connacht, isn't it?
Their last three
They
games, they have
yeah.
in what order? They have Ulster, Connacht, and Ulster, Connacht, and Jesus, it's
They
in
play
my head.
Connacht first. They play
Edinburgh.
Con
They've
yeah,
Connacht
they play
away,
Connacht.
or Connacht
Connacht at
at
home
home, Edinburgh
first.
away, and Ulster at
Yeah.
home. Yeah.
And Ulster at home. They have a week to prepare for Connacht. You'd fancy them to win that at home.
I would, yeah.
You'd think that they can get something out of the Edinburgh way and will be looking to target that if they go fully loaded, which you expect them
Well,
to do.
to be honest, Edinburgh away. If they can do what they did in South Africa, there's no reason why they wouldn't be getting 4 points
Yeah.
Edinburgh away.
Munster are going to look for they'll be looking for three wins, and it then depends on what sort of bonus points they get out of those three.
And that final round, Munster versus Ulster, Ulster could be in a place where they flat out have to win to get top eight.
Yeah.
That last game could be an absolute belter.
Totally. Could be very, very high scoring, particularly if Ulster don't sort out the defence pretty quickly.
I'm putting the cart before the horse there, though. That's June 1st. We've a while to go yet.
On that. Moving on then, the next one was the Leinster match. Stormers 42, Leinster 12.
Don't mean to be a dick here, but like, is there much to read into this?
No, I think look, within this, I think Leinster have prioritized the Champions Cup as you would expect them to. It showed in the selection, the fact that they were sending some of their coaches home midweek. And they got beaten. I mean, this is not something new in South Africa for them. They've sent down weakened teams before. They've sent coaches home and players home before in the middle of the week, in the middle of the tour. And they've got the results to match what I think are the selections. The one thing I would say is, and it's something myself and Tom talked about, there is a big difference between what would have been said 3 or 4 years ago, which is Leinster can send out their B team, or sorry, the second best team in the Pro 14 was the Leinster B team.
Yeah.
And that has changed completely
Oh,
because
that's gone, yeah.
you look at this Leinster team, and this Leinster team without three or four of the difference makers, the likes of the Furlongs, the Porters, the Van der Fleers, etc. You take, if Leinster don't have three or four of those difference makers in there, that team is not able to step up and do the business
Yeah,
consistently.
I'd also say it's the fact that the league has strengthened so much as well, especially with the introduction of the South African
The
teams,
African
etc.
teams.
Like,
Completely.
what got me most probably about the selection, it wasn't like I'm all like I completely understand that they want to focus on Europe. I would do the exact same. I think you would do the, I think anybody would do the exact same in that situation. Like they're on course to be the best team in Europe. Like, of course you're going to focus on that. I just also like the other half of me, I don't know how you describe it, like, but the other half of me is a bit like you've given up top spot now, and now you're in a race that you might have in a way a semi. You might have to go to South Africa if things pan out differently. And again, Ulster would probably back themselves to win on the road with a full strength team, etc. But I just feel they've really made it life difficult for themselves. Like a point or two in South Africa would have made all the difference to the situation they're in now.
Totally. I think I looked at some of the stats. Now it's Champions Cup because that's what's coming up. Leinster have an 85% win rate in Dublin, so at home when they're playing in Champions Cup knockouts, and they have a 33% win rate when they're outside of Dublin
Yeah.
in Champions Cup knockouts. Not saying that translates because I haven't gone through the figures for the URC. But once you take away the home comforts, once you take away home advantage, once you're going to a higher seeded team, it's harder to win. And as you say, that's what they've chosen to give up. Now, could they have done it and done not necessarily sent a full strength team, but I think one of the things that they've seen is they saw the impact the travel from South Africa had on the likes of La Rochelle.
Yeah.
And they said, no, we're not going to deal with that.
And
We will
they're
take,
dead right, like
and they're dead right.
they're,
If you're
yeah.
prioritizing the Champions Cup, that is the right way to go about it. But I think that's what they looked at and they said, okay, the travel for that was a big factor. So we don't want that to influence our team for the Northampton game.
A
And they have
a
said,
little bit of me though just thinks if they got 2 points, they'll probably have gotten enough to get second place. Which means home quarter, home semi, and even if they're away to Glasgow, they'd back themselves there. Like, I just think it's.
the real problem will be if the Bulls get into the top two, and someone has to go away there for a semi-final or even a final.
Wouldn't bother Munster.
Nope.
Just
Just saying.
saying, just putting it out there. Just putting it out there.
But yeah, look, I think that's it. I think it does also ask some of the questions though around, I think maybe some of the fringe Leinster players. Like there's lots of talk around the likes of Scott Penny, Max Deegan, these guys about how they should be in the extended Ireland squads, but they're not necessarily the ones that are standing out. Do these games? They need the bigger players and the big names around them to perform, and that's acceptable. But they're not the difference makers in this game, and in during this tour. And I think that maybe is the sort of the revisionism that's going to have to be looked at from this type of tour. How did those guys that you're potentially looking, if there's an injury, how would they fit into the sort of the big first choice 23? Are they the real difference makers? Can they go on to become something? And I think there's more, this tour has maybe opened up more questions about that rather than providing answers.
Yeah. It's yeah. Like I think it'll be like I'm already interested to see how they approach the South African tour next year. I don't know where it falls, obviously, in their season or anything like that, but like if it's near enough the, you know, the back end of their season again, it'll be interesting to see just who they send over. But then again, I suppose it also the caveat there is, like, if they're 10 points ahead in the league, like, you know, that kind of changes that as well.
I think
too many caveats, I suppose.
Yeah, I think in a way they've been lucky that they so far in the URC, their tours have tended to come towards the end of the season and has allowed them to send that sort of weakened squad down there, that they've built up enough of a lead. If they were to go before Christmas, would they still send down?
Probably, when a you weakened... think about it, would it change things, like...
Well, if you don't have the points in the bank, do you go, okay, maybe I can't afford to...
Sure, you're sacrificing them anyway. It's just a different time.
It is a different time. It's a lot easier to do that with the knowledge that the points are in the bank.
Oh, it is.
Ready,
yeah,
to go.
It is, yeah. Anyway,
Connacht. Moving on then. Big, big win for Connacht.
It is not easy being a Connacht fan.
No.
That guy was watching that game. And I was like, can Connacht not just do something simple for one day? Just give their fans a rest. And then, I don't mean to laugh at this, like, but then, like, with the injuries, and then when, like, especially that third one, so someone went down, whatever, and I was like, who is that? And then I didn't see a face or a number, and all I saw was legs with no strap and white boots, and I went, fuck, that's JJ Hanrahan. And lo and behold, I was like, that's JJ Hanrahan. That's their best, like, in my opinion, their best player this season. I don't know how serious it was. I didn't see any reports. Did you? Did you see
anything? No, I haven't seen anything in terms of reports yet.
But, like, talk about a guy that you're going to need. Like, you can look at Prendergast, don't get me wrong, great player as well, but I think they've depth in the back row to cover that. Like, but you look at JJ Hanrahan and what he's brought to the team this year, like, easily the best signings Connacht had in the last 2 years. So, like, yeah. And, like, credit to the Dragons. Fronted up, what were they, 10 points behind or something at one stage, or 12 points behind at something at one stage? And you're probably thinking to yourself, okay, this will be cut and dry. And then you blink and it's a draw game. And you're like, hang on, what's going on here? But yeah, fuck, life is not easy for a Connacht fan. I tell you that for nothing.
No, and look, it's one of these things. They had to pick up the 5 points. They've done that. They've got themselves back to where they need to be. And there's not a lot more that they can do. For that, it's got them back up into sixth place. Now it's quite crowded between sort of ninth and fifth.
I'd
on
say
the table.
Even seventh and 11th, it's quite crowded.
Yeah. But that's all they can do. I think the big one now for the Munster game is, will they have the likes of Hanrahan or Prendergast available? Will, you know, what sort of a team can they put out for that, and can they get something from that game
to keep them in the hunt? And the thing about both teams there is as well, like, they have 2 weeks now to focus on that game.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like Leinster, who, like, can't even spell URC this week, but it's like they have 2 weeks now to focus on this game, and both of them chasing something completely different. Like, Connacht, I know they're sixth, but they're still in a race for the top eight. And Munster in a chase for the, you know, well, definitely top four, obviously. But they're in, you know, they're chasing top two. So both teams will be gunning for that. And then you look at this, the Connacht game afterwards, like, don't get me wrong, they're at home, but it's the Stormers. That'll be a heavy game. And then you have Connacht versus away to Leinster, which, again, depending what Leinster need, maybe to finish top two or whatever it might be, could go all guns blazing. But it'll be a week after Champions Cup final. Am I right in saying that? So, I mean, you win that, it's very hard to get emotionally high for Connacht at home the following week in a regular game. Like, they are only human. Yeah. You win Europe, your frontliners are on the beer for a fucking 5 days solid. Like, that's a fact. And it's deserved, you know, like, absolutely deserved. But that's a Friday night game after a Saturday final. You lose the final, there's that hangover. Third final in a row you've lost, and then you've Connacht on a Friday night. You're thinking, oh, fuck this, I couldn't be arsed. You win the final, you're on the beer till Thursday or till Wednesday, and you say, okay, we'll dust this off and we'll go again. It's
we'll sweat it out on Friday night.
I think Conor could look at this and go, a bit like the Ospreys versus Leinster. I think Conor could look at this and go, surprise attack time, which
yeah,
it's prime surprise attack time. Prime.
Yeah, it totally is. It's one there that they'll be planning for, as you say. That'll be something they'll want to get at.
And again, they'll have 2 weeks to look at that. They have no celebrations. Yeah. They have no preparations for other competitions. They have 2 weeks solid for that Leinster game, to prep for that Leinster game. Whereas Leinster will probably have their Champions Cup hat on for the 2 weeks previous.
Yeah, that could be just a straight knockout game. Could be the way that Connacht look at that.
Yeah. It's funny, like, we're talking about the chase for the top eight. Like, isn't it funny how, like, I think with Ulster, given everything this year, it's almost like for me, and I know for a fact that Ulster management and Ulster players and maybe even Ulster fans won't agree with me, but the way I see it is, like, top eight would be a decent finish considering it's a coach that inherited a squad, inherited a coaching staff, etc., inherited a few problems here and there. Like, if they finish top eight in the regular season, like, it's almost like a guilt-free cut off the playoffs. I'm not right in saying that, but that's the kind of the way I see it. Like, it is a guilt-free shot to nothing.
Compared to last year, I agree with you.
Where they played Connacht, I believe, at home, wasn't it?
Yeah, and Connacht lost in the quarter.
And that was a game that you're thinking, okay, Connacht are on, or Ulster are on course for silverware this year. Whereas this year, if they get to a knockout, you're just like, listen, go play ball. If you get a win, brilliant. But like, top eight was in my opinion, I've been wrong in the past.
You're right. I think if Ulster do get into the top eight and are in the playoffs, they're playing with house money. They're playing with money they've already won. It's free money. Just have a cut at it and see where it goes. There won't be too many expectations on them for that. So moving on then to the Champions Cup semi-final. We've got Leinster against Northampton on Saturday in Croke Park. Big sellout for Leinster. And what promises to be, I think, could be a quite entertaining game. I'm really interested to see the style match between the two sides.
I think you look at Northampton's attack this season has been very, very good. Like, very, very good. All being controlled by Finn Smith there at 10. They've just clicked. They're really good offset piece, etc. You look at Leinster's defence, like how high it is, etc., how hard it goes. You look at how Leinster's attack likes to go as well. I think there's just going to be so many. It'd be one of those games that you have to kind of go into and say to yourself, okay, I'm just going to keep an eye on one facet, because there's probably going to be 10 facets happening that you won't, like, it would take you two or three watchbacks, I'd say, to probably catch everything. But like, I think Leinster's defense and Northampton's attack, I think that's shaping up just to be the perfect storm, if you will.
Yeah, I like what Northampton have done. They use particularly the line out, I think, as a fantastic launch strike play and to run stuff off. Leinster are starting to use such line speed up off those line outs to go and catch. If Northampton can get to the edge and get a line break, they're lethal, absolutely lethal at converting that. Even off first phase. And I think that's going to be an interesting battle. The second one that I'm looking out for is around what Leinster do, because Leinster have tended to kick the ball away. They're kicking the ball. They want to engage you in that because they're kicking for territory. They're kicking looking to win penalties. But Northampton almost wants you to kick them the ball long. They want to receive it to have that opportunity to counterattack. So do Leinster alter their style of play? Do they make it more contestable? What do they do around that? How can they do they alter it, or do they just back their defense and stick as normal? And I think that's what I want to see within the sort of the first 20 minutes, half hour, see how the teams are feeling each other out, and see whether Northampton can actually live with the physicality and the breakdown work that Leinster bring. Because I think
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, is the physicality that Leinster are going to bring to this. Like, they're just going to look to pump lads, like pure and simple. And I think there'll be an emotional element as well. Like, I'm sure you've seen Chasing the Sun 2 and Chasing the Sun 1. Like, Nienaber likes that emotional pull as well, and he speaks very well. And like, even in the like in that game against was it New Zealand maybe, or against England in the World Cup, and he was talking about fellas and their movies being scripted. I don't know if you remember that. Like I was watching that at home on my couch months after the World Cup, not even South African, and I was like, I'll play for you, my man. I'll do it. So like, he does like that emo he does he's very good at getting you emotionally switched on as well. And when you think about the context of the game, two finals last in a row, not by much, just a kick of a ball in both or whatever it might have been. It's a home game in Croke Park. It's a home sellout in Croke Park. You've 82 odd thousand people going to be full on shouting. Plus his emotional intelligence to get you up for that game. Like, I think especially the likes of Joe McCarthy, especially the likes of, let's say, Furlong, maybe your more physical back row players like the likes of Doris, etc., who's already in, like, well, even like, and Van der Fleer, by the way, if he plays. We obviously are going off with no team sheet, and I say if he plays just because I know Connor started that La Rochelle game, etc. But you look at where he'll bring them to. Like, I think that Leinster pack is going to be emotionally turned to 90, like turn it up to 11. They're going to physically look to borrow a phrase from Nienaber, like fuck you up. Like, that's what they're going to look to do, essentially. And again, if you have the likes of Lowe, Ringrose, Jameson Gibson-Park, for example, perfect example. If you have the likes of him playing off front football, he'll destroy you. And he's probably in some of the best form he's ever been in. Like, his decision making in attack, his options when he decides to go short side attack, etc. Like, he is the man for Leinster in my eyes at the moment, and has been for a lot of the season. So if that Leinster pack can get him front football, good front football, under 3 seconds if possible, as much as possible, I think he'll just run them ragged. I think he's the man. I think everything clicks off him. And I think that Leinster pack will be in a place emotionally that will be able to deliver that for him.
Yeah, look, I find it hard to see Leinster losing this. I think they have the physicality. I think they have the players overall to make this too tough for Saints over a full 80 minutes to let them win. But I do think Saints will cause them a lot of problems
Oh,
in
yeah.
certain points. I think with their attack, and I think that's going to be the How long can Saints stay in this game? Because I think even if they're living off scraps, they have the ability to hurt teams in a sort of a split second. You know, they just need one line out, or they need one counter-attacking chance, and suddenly it can be under the post and it's 7 points. And I think for Saints, it's looking at the likes of Finn Smith and that, keep the scoreboard ticking over. Keep in the game for as long as they can to keep in there, and hope that Leinster don't widen that gap early. Because I think if Leinster get out to a big lead early, it's gone. It's gone for them. And I think Saints have caused them problems, but I don't see Leinster losing this.
No, I don't think so. I think it's going to be a Leinster to lose final.
I fancy Toulouse to come through. I think Quins are a little bit underrated. I think they have a really good scrum. I think
Quinns,
they have.
Quinns are a fabulous team.
Yeah.
But when Toulouse turn it on.
Yeah. It's.
All bets are off.
Totally. And but I think Quinns will make that closer than a lot of people believe. I think their scrum is solid. They've got Esther Hayes in the 12, got Marcus Smith there. They can play ball. And they can hurt you at set piece as well.
Who did Quinns have in that semi final or quarter final?
Bordeaux,
and that scrum.
Remember that mad game. Bordeaux. Yeah.
Oh, that Matt. Yeah, it was like 90 points or whatever it was. That one.
Yeah, it was like, go on, you score a try. Okay, we'll score one in the next play.
Best game of the season, without a doubt. For a neutral, I'd say, if you were a Quinns fan.
I reckon if I was a forward in that game, I would have gone, do you know what? I'm just going to stand close to the halfway line because I'll be back here in a couple of minutes anyway.
I'd say the coaches' smartwatches measuring their HR or whatever, I'd say they literally just got off their wrist and walked out of the stadium. They're like, I'm not dealing with this. I can't count that high.
God. Right, moving on then. So we're expecting a Leinster Toulouse final to come out of it this weekend. Moving on then to the Women's Six Nations, where Ireland had another big win. I'm saying that a lot this week. 15-12 over Scotland, get their second win of the Six Nations. This was, myself and Tom talked about this last week. This was about the result. This wasn't about the performance. This wasn't about anything. This was about the result. Get the qualification. Do what they needed. They got their second win. They've qualified for the Rugby World Cup.
Yeah.
And they're into WX1, I think it is, isn't it?
One, yeah.
Which is, like, when you consider where they started from, where they came from last year.
Oh, that like is... you look back 12 months ago. Like, there's no comparison. It's chalk and cheese. And you're right. I know I wasn't on there last week, like, but you're right. For me, it didn't matter if they won by a point or 100, just winning that game against Scotland, getting the two, like we said, two wins would be a decent tournament. Three wins, I think we said this at the start, didn't we?
Yeah,
two wins would be a decent tournament, three would be very good. And again, that Italy game probably just got away from them, to be honest, like, and they'll probably rue that one a little bit still. But France and England were always like, that was a pipe dream. Anybody who said, you know, those games were there for winning, pipe dream. But I think Ireland did very well the Six Nations. They got back to, well, maybe not back to where they should be yet, but compared to last year, Jesus Christ. I mean, chalk and cheese. Like, I mean, we have a player nominated for player of the tournament. Like,
Aoife Wafer, isn't it?
Aoife Wafer, yeah. Like, I mean, you look at last year, we didn't have anything. But yeah, like, qualifying for WXV1, brilliant. I think WXV2 probably be a better suit at the moment. Like, I mean, WXV1, New Zealand, England, world champions. England have won the last Six Nations on the bounce. You're like, again, if anybody says, oh, like, we're going to win those games, again, pipe dream. But at least you're not playing Kazakhstan. Like, you're against opposition that you want to be measuring yourself against. But the big thing for me, 100%, is definitely the qualification for the Rugby World Cup. Like, missing that there 4 years ago was a disaster. Complete fucking disaster. And especially you look at the game as well, which they lost in terms of that game against Scotland in that, what's it called? It's like a Frenchy word, I think. Do you know, it's like the GAA backdoor. I don't know what you'd call it. Something like that. Yeah, sorry, the repêchages. I can't pronounce it. But like that game against Scotland was a complete disaster in terms of game management, etc. Wasn't there an opportunity to take the points at the end and it was a tap and go without talking about it or something like that? Turnover ball, Scotland went up the other side and scored. And you're just thinking to yourself, this is a disaster. And then in came a new coaching ticket after they failed to qualify the World Cup and regressed even further. But to qualify for Rugby World Cup 2025 and to be back on that international stage is the wrong word, like, but you know what I mean? To be back in that competition is massive, because not only are they back on that stage and female players in the country can see it and young girls can see it, etc., it's the fact that they're not now going through this fucking silly qualification system to get there. They know they're there, they can focus on it and they can plan for it. And it's the same with the WXV1. I suppose it's a nice stepping stone, and it's going to be a barometer against those teams that you're going to be facing. But the fact that they're now in that Rugby World Cup, it's like, I genuinely don't think it can be understated how important it is that they can now look at that and plan for it accordingly. And that's the end of it. There's no, oh, well, we might have to go here, we might have to play Spain, we might have to play Scotland. It's, we're in it. So that win was massive. And don't get me wrong, I know that Italy-Wales game did us a favour as well in the run into that. But, I mean, you make your own luck at times as well, you know. But it's it was just a good week overall. I was about to say, unless you're a Leinster fan, but like, I think Leinster fans were also under no illusion of what was probably going to happen this weekend. So, I mean, that Ulster-Benetton game, absolute screamer of a game for a neutral, but again, big 5 points for Ulster, big 5 points for Connacht. Again, did it the hard way, but they did it. Big weekend for Munster in South Africa, and then Ireland beat Scotland, finished third, WXV1 and Rugby World Cup 2025. I mean, that's a decent weekend.
Yeah, if you're an Irish rugby fan, as you say, look, leaving the Leinster results aside, they're looking forward to a Champions Cup semi-final.
Oh, 100%. That's a hell of a weekend. Yeah.
That's 100%. A hell of a weekend. So we'll round it up there, folks. Thank you very much for listening to our ramblings and for supporting the podcast. Please do rate and review the podcast on whatever platform you listen, as it really helps. And also be sure to share the podcast on social media. Hope you have a good week, and the three of us will be back next week to chat again.